are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
All right, we're off into hour number two. Go to towardanarchy.com. Look for May 1st. You'll see Andy is my guest. He's the host of the History of Africa podcast. The link is there to find the podcast on Blogspot, and you can also follow on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Those links are there. And, part of the discussion when we're talking about the history of Africa is a history of colonialism, whether people want to believe it. It's amazing, Andy, there are people in my audience who will not trust the white man and his system for a thing. But then you mentioned this sort of colonial influence and influence over Africa and exploitation and words like that, and all of a sudden they're no, this is something different. It's a weird thing to me that I've seen happen one too many times. Tell me a little bit about the history of Africa and colonialism, please.
Okay. Well, that's a big topic to address.
Yeah, no, I know.
I'll try my best.
You must have had a thought somewhere in there because in relation to what we were talking about sort of before the break and the major influences of our opinion today or our understanding today of Africa in relation to colonialism, which again in and of itself is a huge topic. But please find a spot in there and let's chat about it.
Oh, yes. So generally, I find that to address this, you sort of have to address this concept that has sort of become widespread, that Africa and that the world as a whole is kind of divided into two spheres as people see it. And where these spheres are has, changed as to where people's understanding of them are. But I'd say that generally people seem to have this idea, which is faulty in my mind, that there are two worlds. There's the world that colonizes and the world that is colonized, and that people have this idea that there are certain parts of the world. Historically, people have usually considered it to be Europe. In these days, some people have tried to expand it into parts of Asia as well, but that those are the parts of the world that conquer, and that there are other parts of the world that are conquered. And that is sort of a dichotomy that has largely been embraced by mainstream society, even if many people don't really agree with it. When you phrase it like that, many people will, make assumptions based off that. So the famous or infamous work of pop pseudo-history, Guns, Germs, and Steel, makes this assumption a lot, where it basically relies on this idea that there are certain regions of the world, namely Europe and Asia, that benefit from geographical circumstance in a way that allowed them to conquer and colonize the rest of the world, and that there are other parts, namely the Americas, but he sort of shoehorns Africa in there too, the author, that are just environmentally disadvantaged and therefore destined to be colonized. Of course, that is a bit of a more modern take. Historically, the answer has been a straightforwardly racial one when people try to explain the relationship between Europe and Africa. They'll say, the whole concept of the existence of biological race is a relatively new idea arising in the Spanish and Portuguese empires in the 16th and 15th centuries. The idea that there are different human beings that are immutably and unchangeably parts of different, I guess you could say, like people would say subspecies in the modern sense is how they sort of understood it. Though, of course, that parlance didn't exist back then.
Yeah, right.
Nowadays,
now it's an offensive parlance, so.
Yeah, nowadays, modern genomic science has very thoroughly disproven that idea.
Right.
But that's sort of the idea is that, of course, there are differences between different human populations. But what genomic science has basically disproven is that there are different distinct biological races. Rather, just every population of humans is different from every other population of humans. You know, in terms of genetic diversity, there's more genetic diversity in Africa than the rest of the world combined. So if we base it off of genetics alone, there are 100 races, 99 human races in Africa, and then one that's everybody else. so, I mean, that's the thing, is that's sort of why that notion is generally outcast. But yeah, in the past, of course, it was the order of the day. And so that was the straightforward justification that people used, was, oh, well, you know, Europe is the home of the white race, which is just better. And then there, Africa is the home of the black race, which is worse. And therefore, it is in the white race's interest to colonize and rule over the black race, who don't know how to rule themselves, was generally the attitude of the colonizing powers. Sometimes they would also, depending on the era, this would change. The British idea was generally more racialist, I guess you could say. They relied more on that biological racial argument, where they would say, oh, well, maybe a few of the Africans are capable and intelligent, but we need to protect them and create a society where they can succeed without the rest of their terrible race dragging them down, was one argument they would often use. Whereas the French developed a sort of similar but distinct ideology that emphasized more of a sort of cultural supremacy, where they didn't so much rely on racialism. It was present. They did believe that, you know, whites were better, but they more so premised things on a sort of French cultural identity, and that by imposing this identity on people who were colonized, they could create what they called black Frenchmen, with the idea that they would then, you know, use that these people and integrate them into the French state as members of French society, albeit in a largely inferior manner, though not quite as inferior as in the British, though this policy would itself have some negative consequences on the societies that it was imposed on. Yeah. And of course, those are the two largest ones, but the Belgians, Italians, Germans, and other smaller colonial powers, Spanish as well, in Africa, of course, had their own distinct ideologies surrounding race and imperialism that would impact the way that they ruled and governed in their colonies in the African continent.
Yeah.
But that's the crazy thing, right, though, is that because of these ideologies, while very few people at least would openly support these ideologies today, right, you know, support them, the media from that time still continues to influence people's perceptions of Africa. Specifically, I find that people's views of African history prior to colonialism are largely influenced by two films, although I'm sure there's more, but these are the strongest influences, are two films, which are Khartoum and Zulu. Mm-hmm. Both are British films produced in the 60s when British colonialism was coming to an end. And both of them are not especially... Zulu is a bit better regarded than Khartoum today because, yeah, unlike Khartoum, it, to my knowledge, didn't feature any blackface. But that's, you know, a surface level detail in the grand scheme of the themes,
given
here,
everything else that's brought up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, that's the thing that stands out as the weirdest to us today, is that the Mohammed Ahmed al-Mahdi, who is the leader of the Sudanese who fight against the British in the film, is depicted by Laurence Olivier, who is, right, you know, very not Sudanese, right?
Right. The Hollywood and history have painted a pretty interesting picture, and that's almost always it too. I'm guilty of it myself. I almost always get that same sort of picture. You just sort of mention the name Africa, and unfortunately, that's the kind of thing that we get. You're talking about tribes, right? And guys with spears and big shields and fantastic art and paint and pottery, and all these things are absolutely true, but it's still a very limited view of what the totality of Africa is, let alone what it's, you know, what it's become over time.
Yes, and of course, that's not even mentioning probably the biggest misconception is just the homogenization. Like, I think that Africa is uniquely homogenized in the public consciousness compared to other, mm-hmm, continents. If you tried to ask someone, why was Asia colonized? Because, you know, at the same time that most of Africa was being colonized by European powers, so too, mm-hmm, was most of Asia.
Right.
People would kind of, you know, be taken aback by that. And, you know, they might be like, well, are we sure that it's just one factor? Maybe – Vietnam was colonized from a different reason as to why the Philippines were, and that's a different reason for India, and a different reason for Pakistan, a different reason for Oman and Yemen. And, you know, I would agree with that sentiment. I just wish that that sentiment was equally applied to the African continent, because, of course, if you're trying to answer, like, how were African societies before, after, and during colonialism, you're not going to be able to get a clean answer there, because the answer is, well, in this place it was this way, in this place it was that way. Maybe one of the most dramatic examples is what my current season is focused on, which is the Ashanti Empire. The Ashanti Empire had a very different relationship to colonial powers and colonialism than, say, Ethiopia, which had a different relationship than, say, most of the societies of Tanzania, and onward you can go down the entire list of countries, right? The Ashanti Empire in particular disproves a lot of this homogenization because of how its experience with colonialism differs so dramatically from people's stereotypical conception. So for one thing, people often picture European colonialism in Africa as being an army equipped with machine guns versus an army equipped with bows and arrows, right? That's how people view it. And that you have the army of white guys in red uniforms versus an army of black guys in loincloths, right? And that's sort of how people think of it, largely because, again, of the influence of Zulu, the film Zulu. And that perception is not even necessarily accurate of the Zulu War. It's very, very inaccurate when you apply it to the Anglo-Ashanti Wars, all four of them, because there were four, arguably more. But though all of the thing is that the Ashanti army...
What's the time period?
Ranging throughout the 19th century, from the very beginning to the very end of the 19th century, almost 100 years of intermittent conflict. So, but the interesting thing about the Anglo-Ashanti Wars is that, A, the Ashanti won two of them, and B, it was not a clash between a pre-modern army and a post-modern army in the sense that people think of it. The Ashanti, like, and this was not unique to them, this was true throughout most of West Africa, especially coastal West Africa. The Ashanti not only had access to firearms, but had fully integrated firearms into their military. Every single member of the Ashanti army was equipped with a firearm, or possibly multiple at times, depending on their kit. Their tactics were entirely focused around the effective use of the firearm, and they, you know, possessed uniforms that denoted rank and status and association, as did their enemies. The Fanti and Jaman and other states around that had similar. They also had militaries based around the use of the firearm. They also tactically implemented the firearm, and they also had militaries that were organized stratified, and there were ranks, and it's not just, you know, a band of tribal men. I hate that term tribe, but of tribes and, you know, loincloths with clubs and bows and arrows. No, these were, you know, armies that were, you know, fit for the time, or at least were fit for the time immediately before.
It just seems geographically, logically, it seems that and in the sense of time, it seems that it would make sense that they would. They're right there on the coast. That means that they've been dealing with visitors by ship for hundreds of years, longer. These are defensive positions when it comes to strategy of defending your land. It's just such a silly notion that people have that they were sort of fighting these tribal warriors, as you describe them, and that it's totally something different. There was, you know, modern warfare and modern cities. It's almost it goes back to the point that you made, that there was some sort of weird notion that maybe they're not advanced enough, and we can just sort of come in and show them how, you know, we can bring them up with the times.
Oh, of course. And I'm not trying to say that, like, there was actual, like, military parity by the late 19th century. Obviously there wasn't, or
clearly
else Africa wouldn't have been colonized. But I would rather say that analysis of African colonization needs to be integrated more into the framework that people take towards Asia rather than the Americas, right? that people need to think of the relationship between Europe and Africa as relating to what they call in Asian historiography as the Great Divergence, where Europe and Africa were once, you know, they once operated on relatively equal terms. You know, states in Europe and states in Africa had relationships that, you know, were, you know, relatively bilateral. You know, most infamously, this takes the form of the slave trade, but of course also in trade for ivory and gold and hard woods and, you know, pelts and all sorts of other things, including finished goods. One prominent industry that came out of Central Africa in particular was that the Portuguese would buy ivory from one group of people in Central Africa, then they would take it back to Portugal, and then someone from Portugal would request that it would be carved with their family emblem and their family crest and all that, and then they would, you know, receive that ivory back. They would send it back to a different kingdom in Central Africa, which was known for its ivory carving skills. I believe this that most of the ivory was acquired from the kingdom called Ndongo, and then most of it was then carved and processed and then sent back from a kingdom called Congo. Though, of course, you know, artisans, skilled artisans live where skilled artisans live, and you know, you get them from where the skilled artisans are at the given time. But that was generally the kingdom that had the best
reputation. They tend to. It's happened in European culture. It's happened in other cultures across the planet where they tend to come together, especially in a time period where they're sort of making similar things and using similar materials to create, and there's an interest in it in places outside of their own economy. So it stands to reason for sure.
Oh, of course, and
that's a great thing.
My background is actually in economic history, largely because, you know, my background prior to getting into history was in political economy. So
right,
and one of the things is that economic history, when it comes to the African continent, especially pre-colonial Africa, has largely been reduced to a term that I really hate because of how little it says, which is people often summarize it as they did a lot of trade, which I hate that term because it says nothing. What were they trading? What were they trading for? Who was trading? Who was benefiting? Who was doing the labor to collect the things that were being traded, who was shipping it back and forth? Like, they did a lot of trade tells me nothing about any of that stuff. You know, so if someone, you know, if you want to analyze the continent and its relationships, you gotta, you know, and especially with Europe, you need to look at it as what was being traded, for what was it being traded for, you know, who was carrying it to where were the important stops, you know, were there tariffs involved? Were people, was the state benefiting from the commencement of trade, or was it, you know, private merchants who were usually conducting it? Who, you know, who did these merchants work for? Were they state representatives, as was the case in some areas, or were they, you know, private merchants, as was the case in others? You know, these all would dramatically alter the relationship that, you know, African kingdoms had with European kingdoms. And so therefore, trying to ask, like, you know, why was Africa colonized is a bit like trying to ask why was Asia colonized? Well, I mean, sure. You know, why was India colonized versus China? Is that really, are we going to find the same answer if we ask that question? Probably not. And it's the same way with Africa. You know, why was Somalia colonized? Probably for a different reason than why Ghana was colonized, right?
Yeah, and sort of, you just sort of gloss it all over and sort of lump it all into one thing. But you know what? That happens to Americans too. All Americans are Californians. You know, all Americans are Hollywood, or all, depending on what's in the news, all Americans are, you know, the racist Southerners, you know, or all Americans are, you know, socialist New Yorkers or Chicagoans. You know, it's all in these very limited perceptions and these very limited windows through which we look at the world that people are seeing these things. And it's great that you're in this position to help expand that. It's really cool. I've enjoyed having this conversation and really learning a little bit about this and why, because it really is, it is just an oversimplification when we look at Africa, when I think about it. Yeah, we gotta go into a break, but then we'll come back here and I'll give you a couple of minutes there, Andy, to get in any thoughts, last minute thoughts before we wrap it up. We'll be right back on Toward Anarchy.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
When you're out there, go to towardanarchy.com, look for May 1st, and you can find the links to the History of Africa podcast, where you can listen to Andy talk about these different really in-depth subjects. We're just, as we always do here, we run out of time, and we're just scratching the surface of these things to just really get in an idea of what else is out there. There's episode after episode available there. History of Africa podcast.blogspot.com. There's also links there for Facebook. It's facebook.com/historyofafricapodcast and Twitter, twitter.com/histofafrica. And then Instagram, History of Africa podcast, and you can follow along with Andy, and you can check out all the other work that he's done. I've really just scratched on the surface. Is there anything real quick that you can hit on? We have just a few minutes left with you here, Andy. That you think are important? Maybe some launching points for people. Plug the podcast and what you have coming up.
All right. I guess the one thing I can say is I kind of want to summarize what we were talking about here.
Please.
Is that be careful of anything that tries to summarize that Africa is this or Africa is that. You know, Africa is a continent. It's like Asia or the Americas, right? Trying to say that as one way or the other is likely going to end up with you either oversimplifying or a complex matter, or in the worst case, you know, outright, you know, misunderstanding. And I mean, that stuff happens even to people who are trying their best. You know, it's going to happen, right? You know, it's inevitable that some people are not going to, you know, that there's going to be, when you're researching a subject, that there's going to be some, you know, follies and some mistakes and stuff, which is fine. That's just my general, if anyone's interested in the history of Africa, that's just what I'd say generally, is be careful of anything that tries to characterize Africa as one way or another. You know, it's treat it like any other continent. Look at it country by country, region by region, people by people, not a continent, one continent at a time, one size fits all worldview. If you want to listen more to the show where we do exactly that, then you can find me, like Michael said, at History of Africa. If you go to any social media or podcast listening platform and just type in History of Africa, you'll probably find me. I'll probably be the first result. It's the guy, it's a painting of Soni Ali, who is a Songhai leader in general, in a black, red, and yellow and green circle. And you'll find that, and that's me. Other than that, I guess, yeah, what we've been doing is we've been looking right now at the history of the Ashanti Empire. We've produced probably at this point 7 hours or more of content. Wow. Just about the Ashanti Empire from start to finish, its foundation, its troubles, its many civil wars, its conflicts with the British, its conflicts with neighboring peoples, and all of that. We've also talked about Aksum, which is the, you know, the civilization in East Africa in the late antiquity. We talk a lot about that. We talk about, you know, some of its kings, some of its founding, its economy, what and why they traded what they did, and, you know, its role in the early history of Islam, its fall, and the fascinating topics there, and how it remains sort of an integral part of the legacy of modern-day Ethiopia and Eritrea. And before that, we talked about, you know, Old Kingdom Egypt and, you know, its rise, fall, its kings, and its political developments and economic developments. So if that sounds interesting to you, if you like learning about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of those spots that a lot of people are easily brought into as you start talking about Egypt and that history. Well, guess what? You're starting the path down to knowing more about the history of Africa if you start there, if that interests you. Boy, it'd be an interesting beginning.
Yep, and that'll be all, Ika. And in the future, we plan on doing a brief little, you know, segue between seasons where we focus on a series of Islamic revolutions that swept over West Africa in the 19th century. And then I'm not sure what we're doing after that, but it's going to be something fun. So
that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot to cover. So, you know, man, it's amazing. It's really great what you're doing. And I'm a huge fan of how you're doing it, and I'm now a fan of the show and you, and I look forward to seeing how it develops over time, and hopefully you'll come back and chat with me again, and I'm always happy to do that. It was really you know, I talked to a lot of people, and not everybody can hold up their end of a conversation. Not everybody really knows what it is that they claim they know they're talking about when they say they know something, and it becomes readily apparent, you know, within the first few seconds of talking with someone, and it's obvious that you have this passion, and you've put in the work, you've put in the time, and you continue to do so, and I wish you really the best of luck on the whole thing, and it's great what you do, and thank you.
All right, and thank you. It was a pleasure coming on here. Hope to speak with you again in the future. Sweet. Yeah. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Andy. I really, truly appreciate it. Again, historyofafricapodcast.blogspot.com. And then, of course, just type in History of Africa just about anywhere. And look, he gave you a little clue as to the easiest way to find him, and that's look for that warrior image on the African colors, and you will find Andy and the History of Africa. Thanks again, and take care. I will be back, and we will continue a different conversation.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. You, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
Yeah, that's fun. Okay, I love that song. So I was sitting here doing the air guitar thing, which is not the easiest thing to do to a great metal tune like that and still be wearing the headphones. I'm old school. I have a cable. It saves you trouble. You can't do things like this wirelessly, because then when the battery runs out or something doesn't work, it's just a nightmare. Cables, you know, they're either plugged in or they're not, and the device either works or it doesn't. You know, most of the time, that's not always entirely true. What did I just see pop up there? Was somebody on a phone call on to? Yeah, sure. Why not? Frank in New York is on line one. What do you want to talk about, Frank? Did you have some comments on the guest? Or?
Well, you know, it's interesting show. I just want to get, do you have his last name? I know his name is Candy something.
Yeah, well, it's Nason. He doesn't use it. It's up there on the website. I did use it, but he mentioned to me, because I asked him if he pronounced it Nason or Nason, and he said that he really doesn't use his last name when he does the show. And I noticed that when I was listening to the podcast too. And he just says with Andy, but yeah, that the last name he doesn't really use it, so that's why we stopped using it.
Well, it's Nathan, though, okay?
N-A-S-O-N. N-A-S-O-N.
N-A-S-O-N. Yeah, sometimes when you go, if you don't remember the website, you know, exactly, then you can't get it, so it's... Sometimes
yeah, no, it helps to look them out. And the link's always there at towardanarchy.com, too. You know, you can't forget that website. As often as I say that website, nobody's forgetting that one.
First of all, I'm going to your site, so I'll look it up there.
Awesome. Thanks, Frank. Take care.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime. No, that's awesome because that's perfect because if you don't hear, you don't know. And that comes to one of those points where we talk about sometimes the idea that people think of things, learn things, understand things, hear things differently. That's why you say it's 2:10 p.m. or I guess right now, I guess I could say it's the real time. It's 2:36 p.m. or it's 36 minutes after 2. You say those things in both ways because people think of them in different terms, or you say it's half past, you know, it's about 2:30. It just depends on who it is and what they receive. So it's always great to ask and clarify. And boy, that kind of leads me into a little bit of a fourth quarter kind of a play, I guess, if you will. Trust me, I'm sticking with it until I can't stand it anymore. I bet you'll get tired of it before I do because I just love little stupid things like that because they're easy. They help trick the mind into following patterns is what they do. You get into a mindset, and that's exactly what this is about, this idea, this mindset. The conversation with Andy and the conversation about the history of Africa, it's about a mindset in and of itself because you have to go into it with a clear vision, or at least with the idea that you're going to clear up your vision of what a thing is, and you can't limit your view. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that I could tackle this particular subject, and a lot of them come out in economic terms, but I want to save that one because I have my good friend Michael Howell coming up. The 22nd is what we talked about, but because of the Matt Hawkins thing, my regulars, my friends are working with me to shuffle around the end of the month to get him on whichever day works best for him, end of the month, early next month, somewhere right in there. So I'm not exactly sure what day, but here in a few weeks, Michael Howell is going to jump into the conversation, and specifically we're going to talk about economics and some of the misconceptions. I want to leave it at that because I don't care about the liars. I don't care about the people who don't care. I'm more concerned about the people who don't understand. You get what I'm saying? When we're talking about these economic issues, you know, the digital currencies and NFTs and different types of investments, short-term investments versus long-term wealth storage. There is so many different paths that lead down to this conversation, but the economic one I definitely want to leave for that conversation with Michael, because I was already trying to talk to Michael Howell. This is what's funny. It's weird how these things work out. It must be a state of mind. I'm at one of these nexus points in my own understanding or thinking of things that I could go either way in just sort of caring at all. It's so hard when you work to be as honest as you possibly can. I imagine the likes of Joe Rogan or even a Bill Maher experienced this. And I've experienced it repeatedly over and over again over the years. And that is a wanton misunderstanding or misappropriation of the ideas that we're trying to say. I always want to speak the truth, and it's always going to be the truth as I see it, and you will change my point of view if you can provide me a solid piece of evidence. If you give me a reason, this is me and my business partners. We say, well, we want to do this. All right. Well, I don't think that's a good idea. Well, why isn't it a good idea? Well, I don't like it. Well, that's not good enough. I need you to tell me why this is. Can we not afford it? Is it not feasible? Do we need tools that we don't have? They're answer the question. And this is the problem. So much assumption, so much ignorance in the face of so much information. It's a very weird time. It's a very weird thing that we're experiencing right now. I started talking about it earlier, and that we blame the tools for our inability to communicate properly and to get information across. And I would say that that has nothing to do with the tool. It has everything to do with the way that people use the tool. But so much more than that, to really finish that conversation that I started earlier, I get off on my tangents. It's so much more than that in terms of understanding and accomplishing an understanding between two people who have a difference in argument. I will make an absolutely honest statement or assessment that does not counter any logical, linguistic, or even methodology, reason. So I'll make an argument, and it doesn't matter the topic. And you know this happens, and you know you do this too, because we all fall prey to it sometimes. I have trained myself a little bit better, but I still do it, and the other people bring it out in us, and we react poorly or shortly, and otherwise do things that we might not otherwise do, or convince ourselves that we're not supposed to do, and still end up doing them. I'm saying in sort of general terms, it's really, really very easy to just let people say their piece and you not try to nitpick it and find fault in it, particularly if there is no grander fault. So I will present an idea, and I will give the idea, as I always do, as my opinion of the facts based on some sort of information, my understanding of a piece of information. This will usually be in terms of words, definitions, and actions. What really happens in a place when this thing that we're talking about is done or used? So what does it really do? These are the things that are important to me. I pride myself on it. I make it a point to make it clear that I don't spend time trying to find out what other people's opinions are about a thing. If I want to know about a thing, I go find out about the thing. I don't let the news tell me about the thing. I don't let the authority tell me about the thing. I may at some point go and look at those things for more information or clarification if I can't find it somewhere else. But what I look for in an understanding of something, it must come from the thing. It must come from the facts of the thing. It must come from functional reality, another phrase I've become fond of. That's what I'm talking about, watching things, seeing things with that understanding of how they're actually functioning. Whether you describe or name or label something in any other way you think is comfortable for you, I will often be talking about the reality because I want to talk about the truth. And I'm finding that people don't want the truth. They don't care. They don't care about the truth, especially if the truth in any way endangers their reality, their investment. Sometimes that's a literal thing, but other times they reached in their pocket and put down on something, and now they are questioning it because you brought up something, you brought up an idea, or maybe it's something less than that. It's that other investment that's not so overt, the one that is time, the one that is doing and being over a period, as opposed to just taking some coins out of your pocket and throwing them down and hoping you get lucky on a return. And boy, all of this leads to this conversation that we'll have to have about economics, because this is with Michael Howell, because it all ties together, and I'm trying to find any single door that I can open, any window I can knock on to get you to open the door and let me come in and talk about some of these seemingly complicated ideas, but they're not. So I'm excited about the conversation that's coming up with Matt Hawkins, because it's a geek thing, but there's all this underlying his understanding of the world that has been expressed to me through his work that I have to find out about, and that I think you'll find value in, whether you give a damn about comic books or not. The same as with Michael Howell, and I've been itching here recently to talk with somebody who gets it, and that might seem like a slight to anybody who listens to the show regularly and knows that I have like Dr. Dean Lloyd on the show about once a month, maybe every 6 weeks or something like that. It might average out to whatever it is. He's here regularly, and he gets it, and I have these conversations with him, but we have different conversations. We have different conversations about the same things. It's really weird how these things all boil down to real simple ideas, and that's why I call them simple. But the conversations that I have with Dr. Dean Lloyd are just that. They're very simple conversations for me, because there is no idea that you can throw out about self that I don't get or understand, because I'm aware of myself. I've talked to myself. I have the inner voices in my head. I can picture things. That's one of the links. Let me hit this real quick. It's at towardanarchy.com. If you look for May 1st, there's a link that I shared there that talks about this new study that just came out on aphantasia. And aphantasia is this inability of people to picture things in their head. You can literally show somebody something and they can describe it to you and they can picture it. But if you tell them to describe it and picture it to you later, a minute later, as opposed to after just showing it to you, they can't picture it, or they picture it in very rudimentary terms. And so and it's a very, very interesting look at who some people are. And there's some percentage of these people who can't get this. And remember, I spoke to you before about people who don't have an inner dialogue. These things speak to a certain level of ignorance or missing intelligence or inability to even comprehend at all. So these, you have to realize that when you're speaking to people, there are some people out there that just do not and will not ever know what the hell you're talking about, no matter how many different ways you describe it to them. And even if they do appear to know what it is that you're talking about at the time, as soon as they turn their attention away from you, it's gone. It's literally, it can be seen. It can literally be seen in the eyes in this case. People talk about looking into the eyes of a horse and seeing them dead. That's because there's not a lot of intelligence behind those eyes. The same with dogs. Dogs have very vacant eyes. because there's not a lot of intelligence there. And that intelligence can truly be seen in the sparkle and the recognition of ideas in people's eyes. And there's a link there that alludes to that notion, that idea that there is some truth to that, that you can see the sparkle, the intelligence, the wisdom. The great wise man always has that sparkle in his eye, right? That's the thing that attracts you to him. It's a truity, and apparently, and science is proving it. It can literally be seen in the eyes. It's a pretty neat thing that I came across, and it's one of another of a million observations that may or may not ever help you in life, but I think this is one that could. I think this is one that where you can look at that person, you can see right in their eyes that they just don't get it. Maybe it's time to just move on. Maybe it's time to call it a day, throw the flag, move on. Yeah, that's the best way I could put it. All right, we'll come back and I'll tell you who's on the show for the next couple of weeks.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, Rad. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. Chuck Schumer and other progressives want President Biden to forgive $50,000 in student loans per student. First of all, it's not forgiveness. It would be taxpayers repaying the loans. Forgiving the loan would be the bank saying that it didn't need to be paid back. Rest assured, the bank will get their money. Or should I say, our money. I didn't go to college because I didn't want the debt. And I'll be damned if I willingly pay off other people's useless degrees. Government created this problem by insisting that everyone needs to go to college, and now the government is doing what it always does, expecting you and I to pay to fix the problem. Student debt forgiveness will be the death of all personal responsibility. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pacem, Parabellum.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
Been dazed and confused for so long, it's not true. Wanted a woman, never bargained for you. Lots of people talking, few of them know. Soul of a woman was created for love.
I wonder if my guitar is G. jealous. I see it sitting there behind the drum set, and I've paid so much attention and love to the drum set over the last year. It's been almost a year now, just over a year now that I've had the drum set, and I built it up and just completed it just a couple of weeks back, added the last couple of pieces, and I just love it, and I play it almost daily, and I play a lot, but my guitar is sitting back there sort of behind it next to the amp and just quietly waiting for me to go pick her up again and stroke my Johnson. The guitar is it's a Johnson brand guitar. I'm not. Joshua Longbrook is coming up next week on the show. We'll talk about anarchy and conservatism and maybe a little bit of Christianity. He's another Podmatch guy, believe it or not. This is it's really fantastic. I'm really enjoying finding these hidden gems. There's people that used to work for Disney and the Muppets. They used to be one of the Muppet workers, and I want to talk to them. There's so many people on there. It's really great. Gregory V. Dial is coming up on the 15th. Everyone is an Entrepreneur. That's his book. We'll talk to him about that. He sent me over a digital copy of it, and I'm going to be reading that this week. And so hopefully I'll have read some, if not most, or even all. All won't happen. It could. The comic book shop has moved, and we've done as much construction as we can, and the latest big shipment is in another 200 long boxes of comics and a couple hundred slabbed books, these graded books, and a bunch of signed stuff. Oh my God, looking through that collection yesterday and looking at some of those amazing suits. George Perez on a bunch of stuff, and George Perez just died. Neil Adams on a bunch of stuff, and he just died yesterday, the day before yesterday. Just one of the biggest influences in comic books for just amazing what he did for the industry. While other people in the industry were drawing stick figures, he's drawing these deep shadowed physique and just filling in all these empty spaces and using every single square centimeter of space within that little panel, that little box that he has to tell a story. He was just an amazing creator, and it's a unfortunate loss for the industry. Michael Howell. And speaking of the industry, Matt Hawkins, a big figure in it, he's coming up along with Michael Howell, along with my good friend, Dr. Dean Lloyd, who, of course, is listening in, as always. It's always great knowing he's in there because he's a great guy. I really like him. And it's great to get a compliment from him telling me that I'm self-actualized. But I'll keep it humble, and that's how I'll remain self-actualized. Until next week, you take care.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.